Hi, family. I'm an addict named Diane. My home group is Hugs Not Drugs on Saturday night at 8 o'clock, a candle night meeting in Cumberland, Maryland. That's my one home group that I have today. Didn't feel nervous, but I know that I am because I can feel it in my face and my lips, and I guess I'm starting to feel it in here, but that's okay. I can deal with it to the best of my ability. Steps 4 and 5. Last year, I was asked to speak on steps 4 and 5, and I did it right here in front of a fire, and it was a little bit hotter last year at that time of day, whatever time it was, than it is now. So it was like I was nervous as crap last year because I had never done this. Well, you know, at anything besides a home group, a meeting. And the fire was roaring, and I couldn't even think. And usually even when I'm thinking, it's crazy thinking anyway. So it was, I felt it was kind of messed up last year, but I did the best that I could. Last night, when we were filling out the paper to say, you know, we're here and we're going to speak and what time, and somebody introduced me to the person that was helping us, and it was the chairperson of this retreat. And the first thought that went into my mind was, oh, hi, how are you? And then the focus was back on me. This is the right person to talk to about if it's day and it's not cold, is there going to be a fire burning again this year? Because it totally freaked me. You know, so I did. I asked him. I said, if it's warm tomorrow, if it's not cold, are we going to have a fire during the day? Because it was so hard for me last year. And he said, oh, no, there won't be any fire during the day. But I kind of thought there would be. Last year, I was so nervous that I figured that when I got up here and I would have to just, I would need to say, I'm sharing on steps 4 and 5, and I would have to tell you what those steps are, that I probably wouldn't even be able to remember what they were or what they are. So I wrote them down on a little piece of paper and stuck them. I didn't have any pockets, so I stuck them down in my pants. And, of course, you know, I was going to get it out and lay it here when I got here and reached down in my pants, and it was gone. And of course, when I went to say what they were, I couldn't get it out. It was gone because my nerves were really taken over. And I said, darn, I lost my piece of paper. But then I asked everybody, will you help me? What is steps 4 and 5 again? And everybody laughed, but then they helped me, you know. That's one thing that's so cool about the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous to me. That's what makes it very awesome to me and very enchanting in my life today, is that I can get so much help from y'all. And I do. And I thank you very much. What is step 4 and 5? We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And we shared with another human being, with God and ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And this morning, when I thought that I needed to look up the word nature in that sentence, because I really didn't know how nature applied in that step. Even though that I have, you know, like I said, I always look things up late. And my friend that helped me a lot said, you're doing it now. You know, that's what counts. So I'm not going to share really about that and what that word came, what it came to mean to me by looking it up, because I need some time to process that. And I will, God willing, you know, to the best of my ability, I will process that in the next days to come, because it means a lot to me today to actively seek recovery, to show up. That's a grateful addict. For me, the grateful is a verb, so I need to be doing something, and it takes action. And I'm lazy, so I'm lazy by nature, right? Procrastinator, all those words that came up in step four. I heard early on when I first came around, which was 10 years ago, tell you a little bit something about me. I came around to my first meeting 10 years ago. I stayed in meetings, picked up key tags, had a sponsor, read and worked step, couldn't figure out how to live it, didn't incorporate it into my life. And I couldn't stay clean. I couldn't get clean. I couldn't get clean for 3.5 years, so I have white key tags, or if I still had them today and didn't give them away, they would be all hooked, and they'd definitely be taller than me. Because about every 2.5 months, when I got overwhelmed with my feelings, I took off. There was no stopping to pick up the phone. It was just that's what I did. I took off. I ran, and I used, and I tried to kill myself over and over and over and over again. But you know, oh, and another thing is, I got a year twice at 14 months, twice right in a row. I relapsed. I was still not knowing how to incorporate any of the step work that I'm doing, reading, writing, listening to people share about into my life. I was too busy in acting out in all those character defects of step four. My first year clean, that's when I worked steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5. When I got to step 6, I didn't move. I didn't move on, and I relapsed. Got another year clean. Still didn't pick up that step 6 in that year. I'm too busy acting out on all those character defects that I wrote about in 4 to move on to 6. Today I have a little bit more than 3 years clean, and more has been revealed to me about this step 4 and 5, having completed step 6. When I first came around and people would share about step 4 and how you don't have to be scared, there's nothing to worry about, it's not the big monster that people make it out to be, I heard that and I wanted to believe that. I was able to hold on and to believe things that made me feel good. That made me feel good. That hope made me feel good. That I didn't have to be scared, and that it would all be okay, and that it would all work out, and when I got there, it would all fall into place, and I liked what I heard, and I believed that. And for me to work it, to write it, to read it, I got to be honest with you, I wasn't a bit scared. It says that you must be honest. By the time that I wrote on it and read it, I was as honest verbally with you as I thought I could possibly be. I didn't think I was holding anything back. Everything that I was holding back was from me, that I didn't even know about. until I got to step six and worked step six. And that this is truly a year of I hope, and I will have to do that grateful work too, to really do some changing. The first 2 years the first year that I got clean and relapsed, and the second time I got clean and relapsed, yes, I was doing step work. I was going back. I was starting over. I was doing 1, 2, 3, and 4 again. My life was just, it was busy. I was all into that people-pleasing, caretaking, and money-making. That's what I did before I got into that heavy active addiction with the drugs. That's what I did before. That was the disease before. And that's what I did. And so I just thought that I could, if I put the drugs down, I could, I didn't want to change. I was comfortable in that behavior. So I thought. It's a lie. The disease of addiction to me, the disease is a lie. So, you know, that's my struggle with the disease, is it lies all the time. And my husband will tell you how gullible I am. And so I fall short. There was one thing, though, I'll tell you that I thought, it kept coming into my mind when people would share on step four. This one thing that I wouldn't share with anyone, but I knew that there would be a way, you know, that I would be able to share it with someone, because it was just going to stay between God and me. But that's what I thought, but I also thought, don't worry about it, because it's all going to work out, because that's what they're telling me, and I believe them. And one night I was on a phone with a girl that I had just met, and her, above all people, we get into this deep conversation, and I'm sharing it with her. You know, and it was just like, there it is. You know, that's what y'all told me, there it is. That more will be revealed is one of those really awesome things to me. But that fire's getting hot. You know, God truly did for me what I couldn't do for myself all my life. Obviously, I'm still here. But in this process of the program of recovery, he again, and it's just so huge, it's so magnified what he has done for me. That staying busy and people pleasing and caretaking and money making, he removed it. You know, just like they said, you know, you keep coming back, doing the next right thing to the best of your ability, and God will work. And he did, and he does, and I'm grateful, and that's why I got to keep coming back. The change that I'm feeling, and the change that I'm behaving in today, where the feelings and the thoughts and the behavior are coming to a better place than they used to be, a much better place, a much more comfortable place. I like to be comfortable. You know, we do. You know, I like to feel good. We do. You know, and I like this. At times, I have felt like I'm losing my mind. I'm losing it. And then somebody was sharing one night, and it like more was revealed. Yeah, I am. You know, but I don't have to like worry about that today. I don't have to feel uncomfortable if I feel like I'm losing my mind, because I am. I'm in a process where I'm actively working on getting rid of it, not just losing it and maybe finding it, but I would love to just get rid of it. you know, my mind, my way of thinking that makes me feel a certain way or has me feeling certain ways and behaving certain ways, which was all revealed in step four. All that stuff that I wrote about, my behaviors, the things that I did. And like I said, though, it wasn't until step six where I'm working on step six and I'm reading it and I'm writing it and I am about to go through more of that stuff that I wrote about. You know, I'm going through it because I'm doing it again, you know, and I don't want it. I don't like it, you know, so work harder, write more, you know, because I want to lose it. I want new. I need new in order to live and in order to survive. I need it. I share a lot about just in this past year of my 10th year of coming around. I was on the phone with someone and she said she had the seed planted with Narcotics Anonymous, and she said, "Do you think I need this? Do you think I need the program?" And just the first thing that I thought about was, you know, you need to answer that question. You know, and I just said, "Well, I don't know. What do you think? What really matters is what do you believe? What's the word program mean?" So I'm like, "Well, why don't you look it up in the dictionary?" Because I got interested, you know, because for real, I didn't know what the word program really meant. And I'd been saying it and hearing it over and over and over for 10 years. What does the word program really mean? And she's like, "Well, I don't have a dictionary." And I'm like, I jump up. I'm like, "I do. I probably got 20 at least." So I looked it up. And for anybody that hasn't looked it up, it's a plan to be followed. And that was like really awesome to me, a plan to be followed. And I couldn't get out of my own way. I still can't a lot. But I couldn't get out of my own way to follow this simple plan. But Narcotics Anonymous, the fellowship and the program, and everything that it has to offer is helping me to learn how and to practice getting out of my own way today. Well, thanks for letting me share. Thanks for coming back.
I'd like to thank Diane for sharing. To give another round of applause, please. Our second speaker.
Oh,
that's all right. No, our second speaker is Brett. Again, I don't know his home group or anything about him, but I'm sure he'll let us know.
Thanks.
Get him, buddy.
Hi, everybody. I'm the ACK named Brett.
Hey, Brett.
This is embarrassing, but I can't remember the name of our home group, but it's in almost town PA down by Harrisburg. Can you help me, Joe? See how good we are. We love it. We love our home group. Don't get me wrong. We're loyal, but I guess the name isn't that important anyway. Glad Diane went first. She talked about how I feel when I come up here to speak. And, you know, before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I was a real socially anxious person, which I'll share about a little bit. And, you know, and this program has healed me enough that, you know, I believe in myself enough that I do have something to offer when I come up here and speak, you know, so I do it. And at work, even, you know, in front of a lot of my peers in my field or people that, you know, have a lot more experience in the field, I've spoken in front of those people a few times also. And, you know, and that's a real gift this program has given me, because I would have been scared or thought I had to put a substance in me to get over that hump in the past. And, you know, I don't have to do that today. So I'm going to start by saying that I'm a replacement speaker, so don't expect too much. No, I'm joking. you know, I do have something to offer. And I'm going to start way back in the day, so to speak. and I won't stay back there too long. But just to give you guys a little bit of a feeling of, you know, where I'm coming from. I grew up in Altoona, PA, and, you know, I didn't have a bad childhood, but, you know, my childhood's where I started to, you know, see the world through discolored glass, so to speak. I started, you know, creating a reality in my head, that, what I believe was reality that wasn't really reality, you know. Like I said, I had a pretty good childhood, but, like, I was kind of a latchkey child. My parents weren't around a lot. My mom worked in Pittsburgh. My dad was a fireman, worked funny hours, slept on the couch a lot. There was active addiction in my house, too. So early on, I learned about, you know, family sickness, about hiding stuff, about, you know, the image that you put out to the public, and about the, what you know, the pink elephant at home. You know, my house was pretty messy growing up, and I remember, you know, as a child, you know, I was pretty popular kid at school, I guess, you know, played a lot of sports. Girls were interested in me, but one thing I remember about my childhood is, you know, I protected my house, like, nobody was allowed near there because I was afraid that they would see, you know, that my house was messy and, you know, the addiction in my house and things like that. And so I started to, you know, hide and I started to pull away, and early on I started to believe that I wasn't good enough. And, you know, and along with the hiding the house stuff, like, I remember as a child, like, looking at things in the mirror, you know, on my face or my body or whatever, and I thought stuff was ugly, and, you know, I created some of these obsessions and insecurities that, you know, kind of fed that I wasn't good enough, or kind of fed that, like, you know, something was always better, or I was never gonna, you know, measure up to the ideal. And, you know, that's another theme in my story, is perfectionism that I struggle with today. You know, if I'm not the best, then, you know, I just shouldn't try at all, or, you know, I should just hide, or, you know, and I'm not gonna be the best at everything. You know, I heard Diane say, all we can do is try to do our best, and, you know, that's it. You know, you just try to do your best, and if you know you did wholeheartedly, let it go at that. But that's a struggle for me. So, you know, anyway, growing up, I start developing these ideas, and I remember in grade school, transitioning into junior high, like I said, I got good grades and stuff. I wasn't in, like, a gifted program or anything in grade school, but I remember when I got to junior high, they put me in with the gifted kids or something. And I didn't know anybody, and I wasn't that cool guy, you know, that I thought I was in grade school. So I kind of felt like there was a big hole in me that, you know, I needed to find a new place to fit in. And my brother, you know, I love my brother to death, but he's definitely not very good at picking friends. He started hanging out with some guys, you know, that were using and stuff. And, you know, with me feeling so empty, you know, and they were around, I kind of jumped into that group and started experimenting with marijuana and alcohol, and all of a sudden I was cool again, you know, and kind of fit in. You know, my early using wasn't, you know, it wasn't all about getting it in right away. You know, I was probably like 11, 12 years old. It was just about, you know, hanging out with some people that would accept me. But, you know, shortly thereafter, you know, I remember sitting in math class, and I didn't understand it anymore. You know, smoking weed before class, of course, you know, algebra is not going to make quite as much sense. And I started, you know, kind of saying, fuck it. You know, using was more important than, you know, being the best I could, because if people would accept me for using, I didn't have to worry about being accepted for getting the straight A's and being a high school quarterback and all that shit. You know, as long as somebody would take me, that was good enough. You know, it was all about what the other people thought, not about, you know, doing just for me. And, you know, as the disease progressed and I got sicker, and all this other stuff continued, like, I started to create the belief that I wasn't good enough for women and stuff. I share about this. It's kind of funny, so don't worry about laughing. I remember in junior high school stealing a lot of, like, 70s and 80s porn out of my dad's drawers. And, you know, some, like, John Holmes and Ron Jeremy shit, you know. Any of you guys ever watch that stuff? And, and I started to believe that, you know, I should look like a porn star, you know, in certain kind of ways. You know, guys know that not everybody looks like that, you know. And, you know, just every little thing, if I could see somebody that, you know, in my mind I thought was better than or something, I thought I should be that, and if I wasn't good enough, you know. So I started to believe I wasn't good enough for women, and I couldn't talk to women, especially without a chemical in my body. And, you know, the disease grew. And then in high school, I found the magic opiate, you know. I remember in the first night I found some Oxycontin. My brother got them for me. I sniffed one and I did homework all night, you know, and a new pattern in my disease began. You know, from that point on, I really wasn't about partying or, you know, social acceptance with my using. I was about, like, believing that I needed a substance to live, you know, to get certain things done. And I became all about living two faces, you know. I was, I always wanted society to look at me as, you know, okay, or kind of a clean-cut kid, you know, that had things together, but I always had my secret life of using, you know. And every day from that point on was about getting off E, you know, getting off sick so I could do what I had to do. And it was all about trying to figure out how to manage my addiction, you know. It became about, like, handing somebody a paycheck so I could hold enough money to get off E each morning. And it became, you know, about how people hide drugs for me so I would have enough. And y'all know that that doesn't work, you know. Trying to figure out how to use is impossible. You know, it's about surrender. But anyway, that's where I was at the point. And, you know, that continued throughout high school, using opiates, whatever I could get. I remember getting into college then. Somehow I made it through high school. Got into college, and I started doing heroin in college. You know, the schoolwork got harder, so I had to get a harder drug, you know, to get it done. And, you know, I made it through my first year of college. And I remember in that first year going to counseling, you know, up at school, sitting down there and telling this lady that I was addicted to painkillers and I wanted help. You know, I started reaching out a little bit. Like, my parents had figured out that something was seriously fucking wrong by this point, and I was getting threats about getting kicked out of my house and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, they had a hard time believing how bad it really was, and I had a hard time believing how bad it really was. I remember going into counseling and only telling the lady that I did pain pills, you know, because even with my using in a safe environment like counseling, you know, I didn't trust enough or I didn't want to admit enough that I was like a full-blown junkie, you know. It was always about kind of, you know, in my mind, somehow keeping it to a lower level than it really was. You know, and then eventually, like y'all know, all hell broke loose, you know. I became homeless. I remember my last day of college. I quit college because one day I wanted to get off E so bad I sold my books. And, you know, you can't do school without books. So I got, like, a bag of dope for maybe a few $100 worth of books. And, you know, it just got ugly, you know. All those nevers happened. And I was hurting so bad. You know, I was kind of stuck between that point where, you know, I wanted to get out of this thing, or I wanted to kill myself, or I wanted to... I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know there was a way out, you know. You're not introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. You don't really believe that this thing can really work and that there's really a way out. So I did a couple inpatient programs and used through them. I remember the one inpatient program, they said there was a piss test, so that worried me, you know. And I told my counselor that I had to be on a medication because I had a tooth problem. I remember that, like he believed that shit. But anyway, he let me sit in there for a couple days, and I soaked something up, and I got introduced to NA. And I met my sponsor, or not my sponsor now, but my sponsor when I first got clean, from Altoona, and a couple other guys that are real important to me. And these guys, you know, they were old head junkies. I was a kid. You know, I wasn't a high budget junkie. I just got a quarter bag at a time, if that, you know, and use it. And these guys, they were like the dudes that I was sitting outside of their houses in the morning. You know, they used for 20, 25 years, and they were trying to quit this shit, and they were still alive. And, you know, I could see how sick they were when they first came in there, and I started saying, geez, you know, if these guys are trying to do this thing, I must be pretty weak, you know, if I don't try to do it myself. And something started rubbing off. They started dragging me to a couple of meetings. You know, my first couple, I might have been sitting there with a fentanyl patch on or something crazy like that, you know. I didn't listen to the beginning of the meeting when they said the drugs are prayer for now, you go outside, but y'all didn't kick me out anyway, so I sat through a couple. I saw people smiling, and I started to believe in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, after a few more trips to inpatient, in and out, I made it to an inpatient in Altoona, PA, and I was beat. I was homeless, and everybody in my family had cut me off, and I was so guilt-ridden and sick that I could, like, finally let go a little bit and surrender a little bit and say, you know, nobody wants to talk to me anyway but y'all in this facility, and I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And that's when it started changing. You know, that's so powerful when you can say, I'm so screwed up, I can't make a single decision for myself. Somebody else make a decision for me. You know, because I thought I could manage this disease for a long time. And when I put the reins in someone else, you know, I remember sitting in those facilities at the lecture, taking notes, you know, talking to people, sucking up anything that I could. You know, with surrender, I became kind of a sponge. And it was like, whatever, you know, whatever it takes. And early on, that's really important. You know, if I see guys coming in early and they don't have that whatever you tell me to do attitude, it makes me a little nervous, because this disease is so powerful early on. You need that whatever you tell me to do attitude, you know, to get this thing. The chances are usually slim. But so I got out, and I was in facilities for like almost a year, you know, when I first got clean. And, you know, I started healing some physically from all the abuse. I think I finally hit puberty, because puberty is hard to hit on opiates, you know. I had so many chemicals in my system, and just started growing up a lot, you know, mentally, physically, all around. And that guy that I was in the inpatient or the outpatient with when I was trying to figure this thing out, he told me he'd sponsor me. And he has this neat little garage in Altoona, you know, that a lot of the guys would hang out at. It's a real magical place, you know. You know, that was kind of my church or my shrine, you know. Wherever spirituality is for you, it doesn't have to be in any official spiritual place. And I learned a lot there, you know. Like I said, in that facility, I kind of worked that first step by admitting that I was powerless and that I could not manage anything myself. And I started developing, you know, some kind of understanding of God. You know, I wasn't raised religious, and I'm still not religious, to be honest, but, you know, I'm spiritual. And early on, I could grasp a hold of that. There's something more powerful going on in this circle than there is just in here, you know. There's some kind of spirit that makes things fall in place just in line so I can stay clean and so I can have a better life. And, you know, my spiritual beliefs have grown a little bit beyond that, but it's still there, you know. There's a God in a little bit everyone that I can feed into and that you can feed into. And, you know, in the first step, I furthered that by letting go of a lot of my life management and, you know, letting some things up to God and not worrying so much. And then the magical four-step came. Finally started talking about that. You know, I remember in early recovery looking at that dooming list of 12 steps. You know, there was a few that stuck out. The fourth step, oh my God. Make a list of all this, you know, that kind of stuff that I did. I thought the police were going to find it, you know. That was like videotaping a party or something. But and then the eighth step, oh, well, the eighth step was probably the worst in my mind. I thought there was no way I would be able to, you know, make a, through the eighth and ninth, make amends for all those things that I've done. And that was just, it was really my disease making something bigger than it really was, you know, to kind of keep me from doing it. But, you know, by the time I reached the fourth step, I had enough recovery in me, and I trusted my sponsor, and I was all about recovery that, you know, I sat down and I did it seriously. I worked through that step working guide, and I was really going to put down everything, you know. Like Diane said, there was a few things I really didn't want to put down and talk to somebody else about. But I thought, if somebody else was telling me, and I believed that the more I was willing to put out, the more I could heal, you know. And I tell people that, like, if there's that one thing you don't want to do, you know, put down, put it down. You know, you don't have to. I don't believe if you don't put that down, you're going to go use all of a sudden for sure, you know. I believe everything's that black and white, but you're not going to feel better if you don't address something. So I put everything down. I talk a little bit about, you know, some of the stuff that I went through and that I put down in my fourth step. Like, I talked about those insecurities. And I think that actually is a section in the fourth step. And I had to talk about that because that was real for me. I believed that I wasn't good enough for women or a relationship and, you know, that I fell short. Physically, that I fell short socially, you know, that I didn't have any social skills. I had twisted a reality in my head that wasn't reality, you know, with the way I saw myself. And that made my self-esteem real low, and it just wasn't necessary. You know, I was fine. I was enough. And, you know, that helped writing that stuff down. And I got to the section on resentment, and a lot of people, you know, that were abused and stuff have some real strong resentments against other people. And I guess you could say I was abused in some way from my childhood because of the way I was brought up. But, you know, I didn't have, like, physical or sexual abuse or anything. And, you know, that's when I always saw resentment. Somebody did something to me kind of thing. But it wasn't like that in my fourth step. You know, I found it was, I had some resentments against self, you know, for things that I had done. And those resentments kept me, you know, kept that self-hatred alive and never let me free from that. And relationships, you know, that's a biggie. And the first thing that comes to mind is that relationship with the opposite sex. But, you know, family relationships, relationships with God, relationships with friends, you know. Friends is one thing I had to look at because for several years before I got to NA, you know, drugs was more important than friends, you know. And in recovery, material can be more important than friends, you know. And we all need friends. And to be a friend, you have to participate in the friendship. You just don't have to take. And I had to look at that, you know. And with family, you know, of course I had hurt my family through all the things I'd done, but it, just looking at family relationships in my fourth step helped me look at how sick it was. You know, when you're living in it, you don't realize that you were in an addictive family and all the rules that the different people play, you know, the codependent and, you know, the scapegoat and all those different things. And the longer I'm in recovery, you know, not to focus on it all the time, but just I can kind of look back and see some of the patterns and see some of the stuff that we did that kept us sick. And, you know, by actually recognizing it, it can help me not repeat the same shit in my own family. And don't forget the assets, you know, in the fourth step. You know, the disease of addiction had shut down all those good things, of course. You know, the only thing that was important was ways and means to get the next one. You know, anybody was ways and means. But, you know, before that, I was an intelligent guy, you know, and I wanted to recognize that, and eventually believing that helped me get back to school. And, you know, I did care about my family, and I wanted to do a lot of good for them. And in recovery, you know, that was free. I was free to follow that path again, you know. And now my family I'm kind of the healthy one, which is kind of scary, you know, because I'm the only one working. Well, my mother's working a program, I can't lie, but, you know, I was the blind sick one that was working a program, and the tables have turned. And, you know, as I wrote all this stuff down, I started to get a little nervous, like Diane was saying. Everybody says it's not, fourth and fifth isn't a real big deal, and it's not, but, you know, sharing, like, the main part that was making me nervous was those insecurities. Like, my sponsor's a big dude, and we hang out, and everybody's a guy, you know. And growing up, my dad taught me that men don't do certain things and don't talk and hug and all this kind of stuff. So just, you know, imagining sitting down with another man that I hang out with in a different atmosphere most of the time, addressing some of this kind of stuff sounded kind of stupid to me, or, you know, just that I didn't have to do it because, you know, it would make me less of a man or something. But anyway, I sucked it up and I went over this garage late one night with my heart beating, and I sat down and we started going over my fourth step, and even these insecurities that I had, he could relate to every one of them. And that was a real freeing experience. You know, I remember from that point on starting to believe that, you know, maybe I was good enough, maybe that I could have a relationship with a woman and make her happy, and that I just didn't have any limitations on my life anymore that I had put on myself a long time ago. You know, and removing limitations on yourself is a real powerful thing. And also, you know, giving some of that stuff up to God, because, I mean, I realize that the higher power I believe in is everywhere, you know, omnipresent, but just because he is everywhere doesn't mean that you don't have to address your higher power to work on things. You know, it's like having a relationship with a friend. If you don't feed it by talking to them, you know, it doesn't grow. And the same thing with God, you know, just because he's there doesn't mean you don't have to talk to the God of your understanding, or however you communicate with the God of your understanding. So I had to start building that relationship to address some of these things, you know, especially in the sixth and seventh step that I had discovered in the fourth and fifth step. Because I had discovered a lot of things, as you all can imagine. But, and I really do love these two steps, and, you know, they're probably my favorite ones to share on, because they had such a profound impact on my life. And, you know, I have healed enough from working those steps. And one thing I didn't talk about was the shame and guilt stuff of all the damage that I had done to people. But, you know, by addressing those things in the fourth and fifth, it helped me look at them in the eighth and ninth step and realize that I could do this, and it wasn't that big of a deal, and that just by being clean for a little while, most of these people had kind of already started the healing process with me. So I guess that's all I really got to share. Thank you all for listening to me. I really appreciate having a chance to share up here. It's my favorite retreat. You know, the first one I got to when I got clean. from being in Altoona, and I plan to make it here every year till the day I die. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.